I'm Bryony Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, if you're anything like me, you feel confused, mad, sad, don't know what to do from here. But the good news is that Charlie Kirk told us exactly how we should proceed. Plus, when it comes to how students are performing, Washington State Public Schools chief says you should trust him, not us. Okay. Also, Seattle's mayor says he wants to spend even more money on reparations despite a statewide program that already does that. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your continued commitment to giving common sense a comeback, as bleak as things might seem. Look, I was sad, almost despondent yesterday. I'm pissed off today. I woke up just with a rage in me that always terrifies me. And I thought I'm going to get on the show today and yell at a bunch of people and swear a bunch and all that stuff. And that sounds appealing, I'll be honest. And maybe I'll do a little bit of that today. I don't know that anger is really going to get us anywhere, though. I think it's okay to feel angry. I think it's okay to feel lost and frustrated and, you know, pissed off at some of the reactions to the assassination of Charlie Kirk. You know, I'm not even going to bother on the show today, you know, showing some of the comments, horrendous comments across the country from, you know, executives and teachers and nurses celebrating someone's murder, a father's cold-blooded murder. I'm just not going to do it. I could play some video of the asshats in downtown Seattle last night holding up signs celebrating Charlie Kirk being dead. I'm just not going to do it. I mean, we know people like that exist. They've existed for a long time, and we know that in the bowels of the internet, there are absolutely horrible human beings who will celebrate someone's assassination. So I don't need to show you those things for you to know that those people exist. I think the idea today, certainly for me and all of us together, is to figure out how do we move forward in a productive and meaningful way that will actually make a difference. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me about this when we talk about Charlie Kirk and everything that he's done with his life and Turning Point USA is I really think in a lot of ways, I mean, he set the example for us about how we need to move forward to get out of this situation, but also just to better our country and make it a country that we're all, you know, not only proud of, I think we're proud of our country, but a country that and where we don't wake up on a daily basis with fear and frustration and anger in our hearts. I don't think that's what America was designed to be and what America should be. And one of the things, and it's what he died doing, one of the things that Charlie Kirk did better than anyone else that he never got credit for is he wanted Americans to talk to each other. He wanted Americans who disagreed with one another to have conversations, not in the hope or the belief that they would all of a sudden agree and it would be kumbaya, but as he said a million times, and I have this clip, Nicole, do we have this old Charlie Kirk clip? He said a million times while he's been out doing these events, and he's been asked, you know, why do you do this? Because people, I think, would assume that he was doing it to get a rise out of people and to get clicks on social media and to share these confrontations of him talking about, you know, radical gender ideology with a transgender person. But he would often share the same story over and over about why he felt it was important to go to these college campuses and to have these face-to-face conversations with people he disagreed with.
Because that's what is so important to our country, is to find our disagreements respectfully, because when people stop talking, that's when violence happens.
When people stop talking, really bad stuff starts. When marriages stop talking, divorce happens. When civilization stops talking, civil war ensues. When you stop having a human connection with someone you disagree with, it becomes a lot easier to want to commit violence against that group. What we as a culture have to get back to is being able to have a reasonable disagreement where violence is not an option.
He wanted us to see the humanity in each other. And for that, he was painted as some fringe right-wing lunatic. But when you really look at what he was doing and you go back and you look at all the videos and the conversations he had that were respectful and heartfelt and where he wanted to understand where people were coming from. He wasn't going to change his mind, you know? He wasn't going to all of a sudden say, you know what, radical gender ideology is a great thing. He wasn't going to change his mind, but that was never the point of it. And he knew that once we stop being able to do that very simple thing and talk to people who we don't agree with politically in a respectful fashion, we lose humanity. It's easier to see that person as an other, as evil, as someone whose life is disposable. And there's this sad irony of the fact that here he is on this college campus trying to pursue that message and trying to show that we need to see the humanity in other people, when someone who refused to see the humanity in him took his life. And I get asked all the time about this show, about Undivided, and we always have people on the internet who are like, Brandy, why do you call it Undivided? Because you're so divisive and all these things that you rant and rave against. And I've always said, Undivided is not about believing in this fantasy world that we don't have differences that are very profound and deep. That's not what this show has ever been about. It's not about believing that we're going to all come together, kumbaya, and get along, and life in America is just going to be joyful and peaceful. No, we're always going to have differences on some of these key issues. We always have, we always will. But the idea behind our show is really, you know, talking about these differences of opinion very plainly, and also believing that the vast majority of people, 80 to 90%, I think, agree on most of the big stuff. And we all want the same thing. We want to be happy, healthy. We want our friends to be happy and healthy. We want to live in safe communities. We love our country. We have some disagreements here and there, but it's no big deal. And so Undivided has always been about, like, let's talk with the people we can talk with. Let's talk with the reasonable people. Let's work with the reasonable people to try to solve some of the crises facing our country. And the other 10 to 20% that don't want to be reasonable, that don't want to have conversations, like, to hell with them, honestly. And so even at the Charlie Kirk event that he was at when he was assassinated, he was there to have conversations. I mean, 90% of the people who were there to have conversations with him, were there to hear what he had to say. Some of them were going to go up and debate him, and he was going to hear what they had to say. And then there was, you know, 5 to 10% of people who were there shouting at him, booing him. And there was one disturbed individual who took his life and wanted to shut him up for good. And so I think as we're all lost today and wondering what do we do from here, and feeling this rage inside of us, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I cried for like 6 hours straight last night. And my sweet husband just like, and I told him, I said, I don't know why, you know, we have so much violence happening in our country. I don't know what it was. I mean, it's obviously very sad. I didn't know Charlie Kirk personally. I never met him. But I think it's this overwhelming feeling that our country is heading toward a very, very bad place. And I think it was the 2 days in a row of the Charlotte train attack and all the craziness around that and the horror of it all. And then Charlie Kirk and just this feeling that, oh my gosh, we have a decision to make as a country. And there are two paths that we're staring down, and we have to decide very quickly which path we're going to go down. And I do see a lot of conservatives on social media today basically just with a blind rage. And their mission today, you know, online is to expose people in the depths of the internet who are, you know, celebrating Charlie Kirk's assassination and try to make sure that they lose their jobs or whatever it is. And then, you know, there's people saying now we're at war with one another and are almost, you know, encouraging a civil war and all of these things. And I just don't think that that's the path. I know that's not the path I want to go down. And I don't think it's the path that Charlie Kirk would want us to go down. That doesn't resemble anything that he dedicated his life to. President Donald Trump talked about, he gave an address to the nation, talked about the work of Charlie Kirk and really what he stood for.
Charlie was a patriot who devoted his life to the cause of open debate and the country that he loved so much, the United States of America. He fought for liberty, democracy, justice, and the American people. He's a martyr for truth and freedom, and there's never been anyone who was so respected by youth. This is a dark moment for America. Charlie Kirk traveled the nation, joyfully engaging with everyone interested in good faith debate. His mission was to bring young people into the political process, which he did better than anybody ever, to share his love of country and to spread the simple words of common sense. On campuses nationwide, he championed his ideas with courage, logic, humor, and grace.
I think it would be a horrible thing not to continue that. I think it would be a horrible thing not to try to continue that. And Charlie Kirk knew, I'm sure, that for a lot of those people who stood in front of them, who stood in front of him, he was never going to change their mind. He was never going to convince them that his worldview was the better worldview, but he did it anyway, because as he said over and over throughout the years, that when we stop trying to talk to each other, that's when the violence begins. You know, the assassin who killed him didn't want to talk to Charlie Kirk. He wanted to take his life. So I think it would be a mistake to let our anger get the best of us and to continue down this path we're on. Now, that being said, I'm not Pollyannish. I'm not so naive to think that we can just happily talk our way through this situation. There are a lot of people who need to answer for why we're here. And again, I don't want to be sad and angry on the show today. I think there's enough of that out there. But I am sad and angry. I'm pissed. And I do believe that it is productive to continue to call out the people and the entities that have put us in this position and who have to make substantial changes in the way they operate in order for us to move forward. It takes two to tango. It can't just be conservatives that look at the life's work of Charlie Kirk and say, okay, we're going to commit ourselves to that and we're going to continue to try to be the better people and take the higher ground. A lot of us have to be on that train for that train to move in the right direction. And a lot of it falls on the shoulders of Democrats, frankly. And, you know, I can offer the platitude of, oh, you know, political violence has happened on both sides, and it has. But I'm not going to sit here and act like political violence isn't a much more profound problem right now on the left. I live in Seattle, where political violence has been a normal part of life for the better part of 15 years. When I was on the news, that's what I did almost every freaking day, is cover some crazy left-wing act of violence where if they couldn't get their way, they would break things, they would burn things, they would hurt people, and they'd make sure you couldn't speak out, that you couldn't say anything. And that's just the way they've operated. And when you look across the country in the last, especially 5 to 10 years, at political violence, it's not even close. It's not even close. The far left controls political violence in this country. And you can sit here and you can go back to January 6th. I will vomit if one more Democratic leader uses January 6th to somehow absolve themselves or make themselves feel better or distract from the political violence we have on the far left in this country. You know, this was Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker yesterday. He was asked about Charlie Kirk. He was having a press conference on something unrelated, and he offered some, you know, pleasantries to and condolences to Charlie Kirk's family. And then he said this.
Political violence, unfortunately, has been ratcheting up in this country. You know, we saw the shootings, the killings in Minnesota. We've seen other political violence occur in other states. And I would just say it's got to stop. And I think there are people who are fomenting it in this country. I think the president's rhetoric often foments it. We've seen the January 6th rioters who clearly, you know, have tripped a new era of political violence.
Unreal. Tripped a new era of political violence, Governor. Do you not remember what was happening for the 6 months before January 6th? Do you not remember all the cities that burned? I was right in the middle of it in Seattle. I didn't imagine that. I didn't imagine the cop cars on fire. I didn't imagine being assaulted. I didn't imagine the buildings and the businesses that were looted to the studs that never reopened. And it was January 6th, the rioters. I mean, I don't have to say it again, how stupid that is. I was on the news the day January 6th happened. If you go back and you watch the news, any news, national news, local news from January 6th, Republicans were all over the airwaves condemning what was happening instantaneously. They didn't need to be prompted. They were all over the airwaves. They were asking President Donald Trump, can you go out? Can you tell the J6ers, the rioters to stop? And that was far more than any Democratic leader in the country did for the 6 months of what was occurring in 2020. No, they excused it and they condoned it because, oh, it's about racial justice, so we can't say anything bad about it. So let's just let our cities burn. Let's let them take over six square blocks of Seattle. And even today, this might seem like a small thing, but it's not. It's a very, very big thing. And if you can't understand why this pisses people off, then you'll never be able to understand why conservatives are so frustrated about what's happening in this country. So Donald Trump orders flags at half-staff for Charlie Kirk. And so governors, you know, are doing this and ordering it. And Governor Bob Ferguson in Washington State put out his directive. And he ordered, yes. And he had already had a directive out for September 11th, of course, which is today. But he also said that he was pursuant to the presidential proclamation. He said, I extend the directive that he already had in place for September 11th in memory of Charles Kirk. And then he said this. Additionally, as governor, I am also directing that the flags be lowered in memory of all the victims of political violence, including Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband, Mark, who were assassinated June 14th, 2025, as well as Minnesota Senator John Hoffman and his wife, Yvette, who were seriously injured in an attempted assassination the same day. So he has to couch it. He has to couch it, and he says that the directive is for all victims of political violence, because it can't just be about Charlie Kirk. It can't just be about a conservative and what his murder represents for people in this country. Nope. Oh, well, you know, we got to bring up the fact that Democrats were assassinated 3 months ago in Minnesota when nothing was stopping him if he wanted to from ordering flags at half staff in June. And you might say, Brandy, it's not a big deal. We should, you know, be consistent here and, you know, honor all victims of political violence. But this is cut from the same cloth as the, yeah, but what about January 6th? Yeah, what about January 6th? It's cut from the same cloth. There are so many mainstream Democratic leaders who aren't fringe far leftist nutcases. There are so many mainstream Democratic leaders who cannot, who refuse to examine without qualification the political violence problem they have within their own party, the one that they have fostered with their silence and their inaction. And until they do that, without qualifying it with, oh, but the other side does it too. Oh, but January 6th. Until they can do that, nothing will be fixed. As I said, it takes two to tango. We can't fix it on our own. We represent, and I say we as in conservatives, a tiny, tiny fraction of the political violence problem in America. That is the truth. That is the truth. This is contingent on Democrats being willing to address the problem on their side. Period. And we had responses all over the place. And I'll say, basically, like every mainstream Democratic politician and even like the AOCs of the world, they put out statements yesterday, you know, condemning what happened to Charlie Kirk. And that's great. You should do that. And in our state, Governor Bob Ferguson and Attorney General Nick Brown both put out statements as well. Governor Bob Ferguson said, violence is never the answer. There is no place in our democracy for political violence, and I condemn the murder of Charlie Kirk in the strongest terms. My prayers are with his family. Attorney General Nick Brown said, no matter your beliefs, we should live without fear of expressing ourselves. Political violence will consume us all if we let it fester. The horrifying tragedy and death of Charlie Kirk today in Utah can happen anywhere if we don't do more to fix the violent tension in our discourse. The rule of law must preserve, and gun violence is never the answer. Now, in a sane world, I would see that and think, okay, good. You know, that's appropriate. And that's a step. It's one step. But of course, for anyone who follows any of these politicians, whether they're members of Congress, you know, in DC or AOC or our governor and our attorney general, you see that and you think about all the times they've refused to put out such a simple no-brainer statement condemning political violence. And you also understand how they individually have contributed to the environment that we're in. Attorney General Nick Brown, how many times has he called Donald Trump a fascist? And said similar inflammatory things about ICE agents. He said recently he did an interview with KUOW. We played it on the show a million times. I won't play it again. Where he said what Trump is doing is the definition of fascism. And Bob Ferguson has made his entire political career off of painting Donald Trump as a threat to democracy in our very way of life and existence as a country. And as I've said a million times on this show, you convince people that Donald Trump is Hitler reincarnate? There are very few things that those people will not do to stop the second coming of Hitler. And so, to me, when I see those statements saying violence is never the answer, and Attorney General Nick Brown saying that violence will consume us if we don't do more to fix the tension in our discourse, I think, you first. You first, because I don't say stuff like you say. I don't paint people as fascists in the second coming of Hitler and suggest that if we're not rid of them, our country will cease to exist as we know it. And so there's three things that have to happen. I literally wrote down three steps because I'm like, what can we take away from this, right? So first, Democrats. Democrats in positions of power, because there's always going to be, let's put out of our mind the fringe lunatics. And that's why I didn't platform them on the show today. Again, they were crazy. There was a vigil for Charlie Kirk in Westlake Park last night. There were absolute lunatics shouting about how they'd shoot him more times if they could. And there's people holding up signs and celebrating Charlie Kirk's demise. And then, of course, in the bowels of the internet, and teachers and nurses and all these wackadoodle people who we know exist. They are such a small fraction. They truly are. They are such a small fraction. And so let's put them out of our minds and render them absolutely insignificant. Let's focus on the people who can, in some small way, be convinced to do better. Because those people cannot. They're just done for. Because if we stop giving them so much political cover, then they are out there on an island all alone. But when they feel as if the governor of the state of Washington, the attorney general of the state of Washington, members of Congress have their back because they're not saying anything, because they're kind of endorsing violence against Republicans by painting them as Hitler and fascists, then that's when those fringe lunatics feel empowered to do more and take those horrible, disgusting thoughts and put them into action. So let's focus on the 80% of people who I think we can reasonably get through to. So any Democrat in any position of influence or authority needs to do three things. You have to, yes, as most of them did yesterday, condemn acts of political violence immediately and unequivocally. No saying, oh, but also the other side does it too. No. Focus on the individual act of political violence. Condemn it, make it very clear, whoever you are, a politician, a public figure, a member of the media, that it's completely unacceptable in your eyes. So that's number one. Number two, you have to make your future actions match those words in everything you do and say. So Nick Brown cannot come out and say, I condemn political violence and we have to lower the temperature, and then turn around tomorrow and call Donald Trump a fascist, because then it negates this entirely. And then the next time, which will probably be tonight or tomorrow, because it happens almost every freaking day, that Antifa factions wreak chaos and violence on our streets, you have to immediately and unequivocally say something about it. Because you can't just let it go. You can't just do it when it's such a big issue like Charlie Kirk and such a big story. And then when it's happening in your own backyard, in your own community. Oh, but that's the left. We can't say anything about it because, you know, we don't want them coming after us. So you have to condemn it unequivocally without blaming the other side or making it a both sides of some issue. And then your words have to match your actions from this day forth. And if they don't, we will call you on it every single time. And step three, and this is the most important one, because if you don't do it, then all of that means nothing. You owe us an apology. And not us, not conservatives. You owe the people who you are supposed to serve an apology for your past failures to condemn political violence and for the rhetoric that you have used in recent years that has contributed to it. If you do not make things right with a sincere acknowledgement of where you have personally fallen short, then nothing else you do from today moving forward matters one bit. Governor Bob Ferguson, I'm talking to you. You were the state's chief law enforcer for 12 years. You were the state's chief law enforcer in 2020 as police officers were being assaulted, as reporters were being assaulted, as the state's largest city was burning, as cop cars were burning, as far-left agitators took over six square blocks of a city, rendering a police precinct useless, endangering an entire neighborhood. And during that entire period of time, you, sir, said nothing. You condemned nothing. You know it. I know it. Everyone knows it. You have to apologize for it. You have to acknowledge that that silence and inaction from you as the Attorney General was, in essence, an endorsement of what was being done. Because when you're out there and you're rioting in the streets and you're assaulting police officers and you're ruining a city, and everyone in a position of power stays silent about it, you're going to take that as permission to keep doing it. And Bob Ferguson is far from the only one who owes an apology and who has to be introspective publicly about his own conduct. Because if he doesn't do it, he can't take on the next steps. I'm willing to let anyone change their ways. And I'll say for myself, if there's one thing I've been consistent on, it is political violence. Even when I was brainwashed in the mainstream news, I still called that violence what it was. It didn't matter who was perpetrating it, whether it was the right-wingers who were down at the Capitol storming the governor's mansion, or whether it was the left-wingers who were assaulting cops. So I feel like I have standing to demand that our elected leaders do better on this and acknowledge past mistakes and move forward. So we have to have consistency. And I'll give anyone, as I was saying, an opportunity to do better and to maybe shed this long-standing criticism that I've had of you. It's going to take a while, but I'll tell you what, even Bob Ferguson, I'll continue to talk to you. I've probably been your harshest critic. If you come out today and you apologize for not speaking out about the hundreds of instances of political violence and extremism that have happened on the left in this state, and you honest to God give an apology and a mea culpa, and then for the next year, moving forward, you change your ways, you tone down your rhetoric about the President of the United States, you acknowledge that Antifa is a real thing, you speak out about what's happening and the attacks on ICE and all of these things, I am willing to give you a fresh slate on that issue. I think we have to be willing to believe that people can change and do better, or else what are we resigning ourselves to? And I hate to get too preachy and all this stuff, but I mean, we're at a turning point, if you will, in our country. And we all have to decide what path we're going to try to push our country down. And I don't want to push our country down a path of anger and resentment and division. And what am I going to do? I mean, I think I can do better too. I mean, I have a show called Undivided. I get awful pissed off on this show a lot. I usually think it's warranted. But, you know, I was thinking about this last night. And I realize I'm talking about this for 32 minutes. We have other things to talk about on the show today. But I thought about this last night and I tried to be introspective. And what can I do better? And I think language matters. And I think I can do better about making clear what we're fighting for rather than what we're fighting against. You know, I talk often about we're fighting against this radical gender ideology being pushed on kids in schools, but what does that really mean? Well, what am I fighting for, not against? I'm fighting for a better educational outcome for our kids. I'm fighting for parents to have more agency and more control over their kids' lives and over what happens with their kids in public schools that we fund. And so that might seem like a small difference, but maybe in the grand scheme of things, it can help lower the temperature a little bit and not focus on against, but for. And so I can do that. I can try to do that. But when it comes to political violence, I can't condemn it any more than I already do. So those are the three steps. Condemn political violence when it happens unequivocally without making it a both sidesism issue. Make your actions and words match moving forward. And when it's warranted, a sincere apology and an admission of responsibility for contributing to where we're at as a country right now. One thing I want to do before we move on from Charlie Kirk, although we're ending the show with something I think you guys will just maybe make you cry. I don't want to make you cry, but our friend Dory Monson, the late Dory Monson, he actually watched Charlie Kirk speak in 2021, and our friend Matt Gilbert, who's an Undivided viewer, dug up the old audio of Dory talking about Charlie Kirk, and it's so relevant to everything we're dealing with right now. We just have to end the show with it, so I hope you stick with us long enough to hear that. But, you know, one of the things that I think has frustrated conservatives so much, and I would say I'm like newly in the last year kind of acknowledging that, yes, I'm a conservative. And, you know, I've been red-pilled quite a bit on a variety of things. But, you know, there's this feeling among conservatives that they start in mainstream culture. They start from this position of having to, like, prove they're not bad people. And if you're, you know, liberal, oh, you're a great person unless you prove otherwise over and over and over and over again. So conservatives are just sort of shunned in mainstream culture. And I experienced that a lot personally, right? As I kind of became more and more conservative and took these positions that were very out of line with Seattle mainstream beliefs. I mean, I used to be invited to a lot of mainstream things to speak or whatever it is. And then it's like, nope, can't have her. I feel like I'm the same person. You know, I'm not a bad person, but it's like conservative, bad. So the Yankees did something yesterday that it might seem small, but it's not. It's huge when you really think about it and conservatives and its relationship with, you know, how they're perceived by mainstream culture. They honored Charlie Kirk at their game. And they didn't give any sort of qualification about it. They had his picture up remembering Charlie Kirk. And they had a short, nice, you know, moment of silence for him. And it was nothing else. And it was this moment about, like, it sucked all the politics out of it. And it was just this moment of humanity. And I don't know that I've ever seen it at a baseball game in America where it's like, you know what? Yes, conservatives are people too. And conservatives deserve, you know, to have their lives honored when they do something important for our country. And I know that sounds silly, but I saw that and I was just like, I think the Yankees in that moment with that gesture almost did more to help heal our country than like anything else that happened yesterday. And I'm sure there were people in the crowd who were angry about it, but remember, we don't care about them. We can't fix them. We can't fix the 10 to maybe, I hope not, but maybe 20% of people who cannot be reasoned with. And the Yankees did it knowing that they exist, knowing they'd be in the crowd, and they just did not care. And so that, to me, is one simple thing that can just humanize people and just say, you know what? No, conservatives don't deserve to be treated as second-class citizens who aren't deserving of love and sympathy and respect. All right, enough of my holy shit 40-minute preaching, but I just have so much to say about this. I mean, so much of my career has been dedicated to this issue of political violence. And I know Nicole, I mean, and yeah, we're ending the show with Dory. And I think it's both emotional for us because Nicole was sort of talking before the show. Maybe we can talk about it at the end about like, you lose these people and whether you knew them or not, the absence of them is so profound. And I, to this day, hear from people about Dory and him not being in their lives anymore, even though they never met him. And the absence of him and his intellect and his insight from this world is so profound, it's impossible to put into words. And the same is true with Charlie Kirk. The absence of him and what he was doing in this country and what he believed in and what he stood for is going to be so profound. I think it's why so many of us feel like it can't be real. So anyway, I'll move on to some other things and we'll circle back at the end of the show with more on that. Shake it off. All right. opportunity to see you guys in person October 22nd and 23rd at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue. I'm going to be hosting a panel on housing policy in the state of Washington with my friend Jonathan Cho and some others. Still time to sign up for the Engage Conference at the Meydenbauer Center. It's being hosted by our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. If you are a landlord in the state of Washington, you need to join RHA today. Go to rhawa.org. RHAWA.org, sign up to be a member. It's like $260 a year. They can help you navigate all this nonsense around housing policy, like rent control, and I mean, you name it. There's a long list of things that they have thrust upon landlords in recent years. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. All right, as you guys know, and as we talk about quite a bit, this just cracks me up. This really just tickles me. Education in Washington state is not doing well. And that's just a fact. It's just a fact. I mean, when Mississippi is outperforming you, you know, you really have to sit there and be like, are we really the world-class state that we pretend to be? And there's a lot of reasons for this, but, you know, you see it in the figures that math, reading, science, kids aren't performing well. The attendance is going down. The enrollment is going down. And I tie it to the focus on radical gender ideology. Now, I have no way to quantify that and say, here's the proof that when we started, you know, pushing radical gender ideology on kids instead of focusing on academics, that's when like test scores went down. I think keeping kids out of school for as long as our state did really had a profound impact on educational outcomes. But a lot of what we use to make those assertions is from the state's own website. Like the state has to post this monthly data on how kids are performing and they're not performing well. And at the same time, we've spent more and more money on education as the years have gone by. So it's like more money, worse results. And everyone should be upset by that. And again, it's just a fact. Well, not according to Superintendent of Public Instruction, Chris Reichdahl. So we had this long press conference yesterday where he's sharing the latest data on academic outcomes and talking about sort of, and he did acknowledge in parts of it that like we're not doing well in certain areas. And he talked about how we're gonna move forward. But he also, this is crazy. He also put this like graphic up, and let me actually play the video first, where he's saying, oh, there's a lot of misinformation out there about how our kids are actually performing.
Here's the kind of headlines that do that. We know there are folks consistently wanting to sort of attack public education. I will say, I don't ever want to question their motives when it comes to caring about kids, because I know a lot of these folks, and we work with a lot of them from these think tanks and these organizations. I think they care a lot about kids. I think we all do. And that's what makes this work so exciting, is we're leaning into what can we do to improve learning in the state of Washington. What's not okay, though, is to misuse information or to knowingly understand what the data says and then state it differently in order to move a political point. And so we're going to do a little bit of that myth busting today, again, not in a questioning people's ultimate motives, but in really trying to understand what are the facts of this thing. So if we have common ground, we can work on common solutions and common investments, whether they're federal, state, or local level. So to all of you watching, whether live or recorded, I really want to challenge you to reach out and get the actual information and understand what the data points mean before we make assumptions like half our kids can't read or kids are not as smart today as they used to be. Those are both factually inaccurate.
Ah, yes. So if you want accurate information on how our students are performing, go to the guy who has the most at stake and the most to gain by giving you inaccurate information. What would I gain by lying about academic outcomes? When we do that on the show, what do we do? What graphic do we show? We literally, every time, Nicole or I, we go to the same place and we do a screen grab. And then we just put the screen grab on the air. And where is it from? It's from the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. And it shows where kids are at in relation to their grade level for math, reading, and science. And then it shows enrollment and all of the numbers and how much we're spending per each student. And that's what we put up on the old screen. And somehow that's misinformation. Fascinating, isn't it? And do you have a close-up still of this? Because it was kind of hard to see in his... Yeah. So he includes one of my ex-posts in his, oh, these people are spreading misinformation. Here's what I wrote. I said, while test scores are in the toilet and enrollment is down, the State Board of Education is making equity its top priority for 2025. What's untrue about that? They literally released their top priority for 2025 and it was equity, despite our test scores being in the toilet. And that's just an opinion. That's not misinformation. How do you like prove or disprove that test scores are in the proverbial toilet? And enrollment is down. Enrollment is way down. So he's accusing me of spreading misinformation when I'm just stating truths. And if you're embarrassed by the fact that while we're declining in academic outcomes and enrollment is down, that you're focusing on equity, that's a you problem. That's not really a me problem. And all the deflection continued from there. So one of the areas where he would acknowledge like we're in a bad place is math. You know, kids can't do math very good, it turns out. And we know that because, again, we keep sharing the test scores and the data and the information. But of course, he has to couch that somehow. Gosh, I can't fudge the numbers. So how do I couch that so it doesn't seem like such a big deal? So he goes on this long rant about how, well, you know, math is, you know, not, our math isn't good, but it's not good elsewhere. And, you know, America has never been strong at math compared to other countries.
In math, the United States has never performed with their peers globally.
Well, okay,
across
let's give
the U.S.,
up then.
Despite our economic prowess, despite our innovation, despite our creativity, despite all of our STEM growth, we're an economic superpower, but traditional academic math that prepares you for traditional college mathematics is a place where the U.S. student base has never competed as effectively against the world. And that's what you see in that middle chart. The world is ahead of us. The world is declining. Again, something's happening to youth across the planet, especially after 2010, 2012.
Total mystery.
And our gap's actually a little smaller now than it was 20 years ago. But this is the second red flag I have for you on math. It's a United States problem, not just a Washington State challenge.
It's like, okay, what use are you? Oh, it's not, well, you know, well, I guess we just give up then, right? Let's just resign ourselves to the fact that China's outperforming us in math, so it's totally fine for us to be paying all this money for public schools and for academic outcomes in math to be awful. I mean, the excuses from this guy. This one has to be my favorite, though. So you kind of heard him reference it there that, like, you know, there's also a decline in math globally, and so since 2010, 2012, like, something's happening to our kids. It's a mystery. So, of course, again, don't blame us. The children of the world just suck.
There are forces acting against youth across the planet that make their traditional test scores continue to go down using traditional metrics. But they are as innovative and as creative and as adaptable as we've ever seen them. And that's a real dichotomy for us. So there's a real legitimate criticism, I think, that we all have to own on whether we're moving test scores. But there's a bigger narrative we have to talk about, from the media to higher education to our business leaders to those of us in education and those in the legislature, that says, what are these things so enormous in the lives of youth in the United States and around the world that despite our investments, they're holding their own. They're just not making leaps and bound gains. We're not seeing it anywhere on the planet at scale.
So it's this amorphous, like, oh, something's happening with kids. So don't blame me. Your kids are morons, you know? But it's like also, I'm sure every single one of you knows what's happening with kids since roughly 2010. Gee, takes a rocket scientist to figure that out. Social media, screens, computers, decline in learning, spell check, I mean, AI now, you name it. Like, kids don't have to think critically anymore. And then in your schools, Chris Reichdahl, you don't force them to think critically, because now, of course, grades are racist and checking attendance is racist and making sure that kids behave at school is racist. So you've taken out sort of any sort of consequences for not thinking critically and having academic outcomes. And you're just like, I don't know, something's happened with kids since 2010, 2012. So don't blame us. You know, it's happening all over the world. And, you know, don't look here. Isn't that crazy? All the more reason to allow parents to take the money that they spend on our public education system through their taxes and send their child somewhere else. Maybe to a school that has figured out that since 2010, kids have changed the way they learn. Since 2010, the world has changed around our youth. And now there's so much happening in a digital world. Maybe we can take them to a school that has figured out that great grand mystery that you can't seem in 13 freaking years to figure out. So if you can't figure out it out in 13 years with more money than you've ever had before, how to teach kids who are living in this new digital world, then maybe you should let parents take their kids elsewhere and somewhere where they can figure that out. Huh? Seems like a good idea for me. But what do I know? You know, I'm not the superintendent of public instruction. I'm just a lady with a podcast. All right, we'll have a double dose of unbelievable coming up next. First, there's a lot happening with the economy, global trade deals, you know, influx every single day, the uncertainty of AI and new digital coins popping up all over the place, whatever the hell those are. I never could quite fully understand it. So with all of that, are you concerned about how much risk your retirement portfolio is exposed to? Is it time to just get back to basics? Well, you can join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his Back to Basics live webinar October 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. The webinar will be a frank discussion on the basic fundamentals of value investing, a perspective on the outlook for the remainder of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible, which is what we all want. Hear directly from Zach as he shares insights in this free Back to Basics webinar October 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Register now and know your riskpodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. My own mother has invested with Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital. So if it's good enough for my mom, it's good enough for you. Wow, I just made up that slogan. I wonder if they'll like it. If it's good enough for my mom. All right, let's do a double dose of unbelievable. Despite the city of Seattle racing towards a $200 million or so budget deficit, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, who's desperately trying to keep his job, thinks that we should spend $80 million on reparations. Boom. But now, I think part of this is the fact that Bruce Harrell is trying to keep his job, right? And he's got this very, very progressive challenger, Katie Wilson, who is doing pretty well. And all signs are that if something doesn't shift dramatically, that he will lose in November and he won't be the mayor anymore. And so I think he's trying to just throw out stuff and see what sticks. And reparations, you know, for the Seattle leftist always sounds like a good thing. From the Seattle Times, Mayor Bruce Harrell wants reparations fund to help people buy houses. It says Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell wants to spend $80 million over the next 4 years on an anti-gentrification and reparations fund aimed at countering some of the racist covenants and historical redlining that limited housing opportunities for the city's Black residents. The proposal lacked specifics and would require approval from the Seattle City Council, but Harrell said it would go toward helping families with down payments and general housing costs. He said, we have to recognize some realities about this city. We have to acknowledge how unaffordable Seattle has become. So what stands out to you with all that, besides the fact it's a stupid idea? We already have a program exactly like that in the state of Washington, a first of its kind in the nation reparations program that does what? Gives Black first-time homebuyers free, with our money, down payments. We already have it. They're spending tens of millions of dollars on it. And in fact, they just enhanced it this year so that when they give these Black first-time homebuyers, who don't have to prove, by the way, that they were directly impacted by redlining, when they give them a down payment, it used to be a loan. Hey, in 5 years' time or whenever you go to sell the house, you have to pay that back and then we can use that money to help other people. It was a zero interest loan. And what do they do to that program this year? Well, they said it's not a loan, it's a gift. If you live in that house for 5 years, it's a gift. So now on average, they are gifting first-time Black homebuyers $120,000, just like that. All the money you had to save for your first down payment. Gosh, you got unlucky if you were a whitey in the city of Seattle. Talk about race relations. You had to work two jobs to save because you had no generational wealth to buy your first home. Well, you should have been born black, because even if people here living in Seattle have no direct proof that they were descended from or had individuals who lived here who were discriminated against in housing because of the pigmentation of their skin, they get $100,000, $20,000 on average for free. So we already have that program at the state level, which is, it's being sued. People are suing over it right now because it's clearly racist and it's unconstitutional. And I don't know how it will stand up in a court of law. In a Washington state court, yes, but if and when the Supreme Court takes it up. So does Mayor Bruce Harrell really plan to do this? Is it just something that he's saying until November to try to win over a progressive base? But either way, we already have this program in the state, despite the fact that the state is in a budget deficit and shouldn't be spending money on nonsense like that anyway. And Seattle has a $200 million budget deficit. And you want to spend $80 million over 4 years on a racist policy to help people buy a house based on skin pigmentation. Man, Bruce Harrell really is as bad as I thought he was. And I got to say, as the days go by, I kind of don't care if he loses. It's going to be bad for the city of Seattle. But this guy doesn't know who he is. We don't know who he is. One day he's a moderate. The next day he's proposing reparations. All right, let's get to a double dose of unbelievable. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, so talking about your money being wasted on dumb stuff, you remember, of course, the fall of Roe v. Wade and just the panic that it induced in blue states. And at the time, Governor Jay Inslee was our governor in Washington state. And he made this big deal about how we're going to be a, you know, a bastion for people who want to come here and kill their unborn babies. And I say that as someone who is pro-choice. So one of the things that they did is they bought this big stockpile of the abortion pill. What is the name of it? Mifepristone. So they came out, I remember his press conference very well, this big press conference. We're going to spend millions of dollars. We're going to stockpile this drug in case the Trump administration decides that it's going to ban it or there's going to be something crazy that happens where it's unavailable. So we'll have a stockpile of it and we're going to protect women's reproductive rights. Well, that giant stockpile is about to expire. And the pills are not going to be good. And so we wasted millions of dollars so Governor Jay Inslee could grandstand. And I freaking knew this was going to happen. So 30,000 of these abortion pills paid for with your money. They were bought in 2023. They are about to expire if they're not used because, you know, this fear-mongering that they had of we're not going to be able to get these and the supply won't keep up with demand never came to fruition. So Washington State Standard says Washington State is preparing to destroy much of its abortion pill stockpile as 30,000 doses are set to expire at the end of January. Then Governor Jay Inslee authorized the purchase of the first 30,000 doses in 2023 as a three-year insurance policy in case the drug was no longer available due to restrictions at the federal level. In Washington, that hasn't been an issue, at least not yet. Inslee okayed the purchase of another 17,600 doses shortly before leaving office in January, costing taxpayers nearly $1 million. So that's on top of the stockpile that was already sitting there, not being used, about to expire. And so they're sitting right now at the Department of Corrections facility. Those 30,000 doses cost $1.275 billion. And these were also for people who were like, came into prison pregnant, but just the general population of people. And they also, by the way, have to pay to incinerate the pills, which I think is a funny detail.
Can we just flush them? Like normal medicine?
Well, we don't want the salmon to have good miscarriages. You know, we can't do that. We can't put that into the water. Salmon repopulating is already a problem. It says the state can only provide mifepristone to qualified clinics and prescribers and has to sell it for at least the price of which it was purchased. Said a spokesperson for the governors, but here's the kicker. Providers can still get these pills for less from wholesalers. So even if, get this, and they didn't think this through. So there hasn't been a shortage or an inability to get these pills. So these clinics, they get them from wholesalers mm-hmm. for like a fraction of the cost that the state paid for them. So even if you have some sort of demand, you know, they need these pills still. It's not as if people have stopped using it. They're not going to get it from the state stockpile because they can get it elsewhere for cheaper. So we're literally flushing or incinerating $2 million so Governor Jay Inslee could make, could grandstand over abortion access. This is the stuff that drives me nuts. It is absolutely crazy. And we're in a budget deficit. So, you know, literally incinerating $2 million of your money. Literally incinerating it at the end of January. Just want you to know.
And he like grabs and he threw some more money at it just as he was leaving. That was in addition to the first.
Ugh. Crazy people. Crazy. Moron. All right. Coming up next, we'll have our weekly edition of Florida Report to Governor Ron DeSantis reacting to, of course, the assassination of Charlie Kirk and doing away with all vaccine mandates in the state. We'll talk about it with my sister Miranda. First, if you are thinking about selling your home, maybe like many people, you've had enough and you're moving out of Washington state. I hope that's not the case. We need you here. Don't leave me. Don't abandon me. But if you're going to, reach out to our friend Wes Jones to sell your home. You could at least do that for us. On your way out the door, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a long time. And there's a reason for that. He's very good at it. He's been through all the market ups and downs. He knows the markets in your neighborhoods like the back of his hand. And he is so good. I mean, one of the feedback, a piece of feedback I always get from our viewers who use Wes to sell their home is the communication. And it's totally a team effort. And he's walking you through it every step of the way. He's talking you through his strategy. He's being honest with you about what might need, what you might need to do to your home in order to get the best possible price. And yes, that might include, and no home seller wants to hear this, but it might include making some cosmetic upgrades to your home. But here's the good news. Wes can handle all of that. You don't have to lift a finger. He can bring in the contractors. He can manage the contractors. He loves doing that stuff. He was the son of a builder. And you don't even have to pay for those upgrades until closing. So you don't have to worry about writing some big fat check, which nobody wants to do when you're selling your home. So go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their free home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, one of the many, many prominent conservatives who is really in a state of shock over the assassination of Charlie Kirk is Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And he is speaking out not only about what happened to Charlie Kirk, but also about this larger issue of political extremism, especially what's happening on college campuses. Let's talk about it in our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, tough day yesterday. I know that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was also close with Charlie Kirk. So here's how he obviously had a reaction to the sadness of the assassination, but also about how this is much bigger than that.
This is a big wound for this nation because a Republican government cannot endure if we cannot have situations where it's safe to disagree, where you can actually go and give a different perspective. But we've seen people get shut down on college campuses. We've seen violence not approaching this level on college campuses. And then this event, I think, really gets to the heart of whether Republican government can long survive.
Yeah, and I think that's what's sad about, you know, and there was probably a period for me where I would just believe what people were painted as. And, oh, Charlie Kirk, you know, he's this crazy right winger. But when you really sit and watch what he would do on these college campuses, it literally was like, hey, I'm not trying to change your mind. You're not trying to change my mind, but let's just talk. And it wasn't controversial at all.
No, not at all. And I think probably within the last year or so, I have a few friends that we've been sharing a lot of his kind of clips that go around Instagram and stuff back and forth. And I'm not a super religious person and I'm not super extreme on any level, but listening to him talk like makes you want to engage in conversation. It's such a friendly environment that he offered people. So for this to happen to somebody like that, that was kind of like crossing those that boundary of like sensitivity and just allowing people to like feel safe in his space to talk about things, for this to happen to somebody like that, I think it just hurts differently.
Yeah, and I think Governor DeSantis is right. It really is about the survival of our republic and whether, you know, there's the First Amendment for a reason. And, you know, can people speak their mind without being executed for it? I mean, in the United States of America, one would hope so. So he also talked about, you know, we have, and I would argue, a lot of this mind virus that is almost creating these young people who believe, if you know, you're hurting me if you disagree with me. your words are violence and I have to respond with literal violence. I think a lot of that is being born on these college campuses and the indoctrination that's happening. And as a result, we see this hostile environment on college campuses. And Governor DeSantis talked about the steps that they've taken to try to prevent that in Florida.
I think it flows from this intolerance to opposing ideas. One of the things we've done in Florida is say students are going to be held accountable if they are interfering in a graduation ceremony or shouting down a speaker, because that's not behavior that's conducive to a free exchange of ideas. And so I think that's very important. Now, this is obviously a premeditated assassination to try to snuff out an opposing viewpoint. So yeah, this is the most extreme example we've ever seen, but the intolerance has been very real for a long time. And, you know, that's part of the reason I think why so many people respected Charlie, because he knew he was going into the lion's den when he's going on the campuses of these universities. He knew what he was in for. And yes, there are threats. He probably got threats almost every time he went.
Yeah. And college campuses have always been a place where students, you know, dissent, and going back decades and decades and decades, and they'd have protests. And but that's the difference. And Ron DeSantis sort of points it out there is it's one thing to protest and to want to dissent from whatever it is. It's another thing to interrupt people, to shut people down, to scream at people, to ruin their college experience. And he says, we're just not allowing that in Florida. You can protest. You can have a problem with things. You can express that opinion on college campuses. That's part of the beauty of America. But you can't take it to a level, certainly not obviously what happened, you know, in Utah, but you can't take it to a level where you're ruining other people's ability to do the same.
Yeah, and it makes me feel like, you know, there's always that extracurricular option in high school to take debate, like to be a part of the debate team. I kind of feel like debate should just be part of like being in school, like learning how to have civil discourse and conversation that's respectful, even when you disagree. It should be taught as like a life skill.
Yeah, 100%. All right, let's move on to a different story. Florida ending all vaccine mandates. So not just COVID, like the whole kit and caboodle, they can't mandate anything or won't?
Yeah, they are taking steps to eliminate all mandates, specifically in public schools and also in like government jobs and offices for all vaccines. They basically are saying, who am I to tell you what to put in your body? Make informed decisions and that's it. And I honestly fully agree with this. So the plan will start. It'll take about 90 days to go into effect, but the plan will start with public school mandates. It's going to include lifting vaccine mandates for things like chickenpox, hepatitis B, influenza, meningitis, and simple kind of like contagious diseases like that. And then all the other ones are going to have to go through legislation to get changed. So we're going to have to wait to see what happens in the session next year. But that will cover everything else: measles, polio, pertussis, mumps, tetanus, you have it. So, and I don't see that having any problem getting passed in the state of Florida.
No, I mean, it worries me a little bit. I agree that it's a sort of a slippery slope. We saw how bad vaccine mandates were with COVID, but COVID vaccines were a different beast, right? They were pushed through, they were thrust upon people before we really fully understood their effectiveness or their side effects or anything. Some of the vaccines you listed, I mean, these are long, long tested effective vaccines. Now, I agree it shouldn't be the government saying, put this in your arm. In fact, Florida's chief health official, who's Black, I feel like I need to say that because he compares these vaccine mandates to like slavery, essentially. Like, I'm going to tell you exactly, your body is mine, essentially, to do with what I please. So I hope that Florida pairs this and health officials, and it's really up to doctors, right, with the knowledge that parents need to make these the right decision for their kids and, in the case of communicable diseases, for the community at large.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think it is, for lack of a better way of saying it, I think it is their burden to bear to make sure that people are informed and have all the education and the knowledge at hand in making these decisions. I think a lot of these vaccines are just kind of like, oh, my parents did it, so I do it, so my kids will do it, rather than actually knowing why and what you're doing. So I do like the idea of creating more of a knowledge base so that people can make those decisions on their own. But I do fear that because of the COVID vaccine, people have this skepticism and they apply it across the board. Yep. So I think everybody should make informed decisions, but I do think it is up to people to be able to do that.
Yeah, and it's not even, I think, a vaccine skepticism. It's a government skepticism where you told us to do this. You made us essentially, in some instances, do this under threat of us losing our livelihood or our kids couldn't go to school or whatever it is. Then it didn't even really work. And it made some people really sick. And so it's a skepticism of what the government tells you to do. And so really, in some ways, I think government vaccine mandates are ineffective in that people don't trust the government to give them adequate health information. So interesting. We'll see what happens with that. Obviously, like you said, it needs to go through a legislative process. I'm all for it. And I do trust people to make decisions that are best for them. I do think when you get into this sort of territory of your decisions affect other people, what is that going to look like? So, all right, Miranda, appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good weekend.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, we'll see how that one goes. I mean, if there's some big like uptick in Florida of a certain disease and it's because there's not, I don't know. I don't like government vaccine mandates. I think we're all over that. But as long as you've got the information you needed on which ones are good, which ones maybe are not so much, I don't know. Curious what you guys think. Speaking of what you think, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll for our paid subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X. Which, by the way, for people who are subscribers on X, I don't know what's going on with the poll feature on X. It's not working properly, and I've inquired about it. So I'm working on it, but, you know, I don't know what's going on with it. The question I asked, who do you most blame for the political temperature in our country? Democrats, Republicans, the news media, or social media? Nicole?
Oh, I'd say social media, because I think the other three utilize social media. It amplifies.
Yep.
And it is to blame, which, you know, I think it's good and bad. So it is obviously the reason we can do what we do, but it's good and bad, and it's used for evil.
You know, this is one of those rare instances where we agree.
Yeah.
Social media, because I think that these sorts of divisions have always existed.
Yep.
But now they're just so readily available, and we can respond to people in an instant, and we could be angry or whatever it is.
Amplify.
And everything travels a million miles an hour. And I mean, even the desensitization, like the horrific video of Charlie Kirk being all over the place.
Right.
And it's like, we never used to see things like that. We'd hear about it. And, you know, sometimes I think there's something to being, you know, being confronted with the reality of how gruesome something was. But when it's happening so often, like just this week, we had the Charlotte train attack. You see this young woman and what happens to her, and then Charlie Kirk, and it's like, oh my gosh, it's desensitizing us.
Well, it's just like when, I mean, we saw that video before the announcement was made that he had died. And, you know, that used to be a big thing where, you know, when JFK or when Martin Luther King died, I mean, that was a big announcement, and it was one, you know, somebody had that responsibility to tell the nation, and you gave that announcement, and you prepared the nation, and you gave it with this, you know, what Trump eventually did,
yeah.
But it was with this like assurance that we're going to get through this and whatever. But we all saw that video and we knew.
Yeah.
And we had to kind of, you know, put on this like, well, maybe, yeah. Well, you know.
Oh, we knew the second. And it's hard to say that. But you're so right. There used to be it was delivered with this gravity of the moment that the nation would get together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the facts that were already, you know, more laid out. So it's just, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So our subscribers disagree with us. 61% mm-hmm. saying the news media, 24% saying the Democrats, 0% saying the Republicans, mm-hmm. and 15% saying social media. Maud said, I think that social media has more power than news media these days, but both are to blame. Q said, I would like to answer all, if possible. All of these entities have a role to play in this. And yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think Republicans' hands are clean. Not in the slightest. But
there was some dispute over it. Did you mean Republicans and Democrats in general as a whole, or did you mean politicians of those sides?
No, as a whole.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
There was people saying, I don't know, or trying to decide how you were interpreting that.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Republicans their hands aren't clean in that, but it's so lopsided.
Right.
Anyone who denies that is just not living in reality. Let's see. Vivian says news media and social media. David says, I blame the fire, not the wind that spread the fire, for burning down the forest. So basically suggesting that, you know, at the end of the day, social media might spread these things further, but it's just reflecting what we're saying, right?
It manipulates sometimes, though. You can manipulate things. I think that not a lot of people actually have cable anymore. So the news media, I don't know anybody I really don't know anybody that watches the news as the news. They watch it on social media.
Yeah.
They watch clips.
I know some people who watch the news as the news, and those are the most misinformed, brainwashed
some
people
Fox
I
News,
know.
Some CNN, things like that. But I mean the local King Cuomo.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot of people that actually still have cable.
Yeah. But. Oh, I agree. Over on X, Beth Dutton says 100% the news media. Double Tap says the same thing on locals. Spark of Pierre says, at least since George Floyd, Democrats poison waters, blame someone else, and then legacy left-leaning social media distributes the toxic brew. Corrupt hand in toady glove. Hydro Dog says social media, then the talk shows on CNN, Fox, then the radical politicians on both sides of the aisle. And I always say, politicians will do what the media lets them get away with doing, right? Mm-hmm. And what the populace lets them get away with doing. So as much as they have such a profound responsibility, I actually like put them lower in the list of blame because they're going to do what they're going to do. And we're supposed to stop them from doing it. Let's see. Matthew Cook, Dems, and it's not even close. It's Dem politicians and Dem media that label conservatives the worst things that one can be called. Nazis, fascists, racists, bigots, transphobes, and on and on and on. These are the people that celebrate the murder of a healthcare CEO. Yeah, I do agree mm-hmm. with you there. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll get to, should we do viewer comments? Let's just roll right into that. We've got a great closing sanity check, a very profound one for you today. Speaking of Matthew Cook, he dropped us a super chat. Quote, pick the target, freeze it, personalize it, and polarize it. Saul Alinsky, rules for radicals. This is the leftist playbook. Label those they don't agree with the most evil labels to justify silencing them by any means. Right. Like Charlie Kirk said, it's about stripping people of their humanity. And if you don't see them as human, you see them as disposable.
Right.
Summer CS. I was thinking about you, Brandy. Stay strong and safe. Keep doing the great work. My high schooler came home yesterday talking about it. I didn't even know he knew Charlie. His influence was immense. Yeah, and I got a lot of text messages yesterday from people saying, you know, be mm-hmm. safe and all of that. And I always appreciate that. You know, but Charlie Kirk knew he wasn't safe. I mean, and to a much larger extent, certainly than me. And he did it anyway. I mean, he put himself at risk every single time and he believed that it was worth it and that the ends, you know, justified the means. And it's to a smaller extent, you know, I said this after I got assaulted again by Antifa down at the ICE facility. Like, had we not been there, then it would have been a Seattle Times story about how people right. were peaceful and ICE was violent. And so, you know, I mean, there is justification for the risk. And in killing Charlie Kirk, like, they want us to shut up. They want us to be scared. They want us to hide. They want us to cower. So whatever they want us to do through an act like that, we have to do the opposite. So we have to be more bold, more brave than ever before. And, you know, if that's risky, then so be it.
I do think this has fired people up. And
yes,
I think Greg Gutfeld might have said it, but I was thinking it yesterday. I think this will be a turning point and yeah. how ironic.
Yeah.
But I do think it's fired some people up. I've seen multiple, you know, I've seen some people that have left the business say they're coming back, and people that haven't been going to college campuses say, okay, that's it, I'm going. And yeah. that, and I think it will be an explosion of, you know, people willing to speak up and speak out
yeah.
and
hopefully
and
change.
Do the same thing
yeah.
that he was doing.
Tierra Nipkes, at what point do we stop and realize that the communist revolution has started? And if we don't stand up, they are going to kill everyone who they deem as an enemy of their cause. This is what happened in China during the communist revolution. At what point do we acknowledge what is really happening? Sherry says the left does not believe in coexisting. They will not quietly go about their business and leave the rest of us alone. We all must bridge the communication gap and encourage everyone to carry forward the important work that Charlie Kirk started. Tila Rose on Facebook, blaming the right, the left or right, is political violence. No, it's not. Words are not violence, first of all. And that's how we got ourselves into this situation, is the left started treating words as violence. And that's what it was. Like, it was violent to them what Charlie Kirk was saying.
Right.
No, it's not. No. He had a different opinion than you. And he was actually very respectful in communicating with people. But there is this really violent faction on the left that's like, you know, if you speak against me, it's as good as putting a bullet in me. And that's just stupid. That's just ridiculous.
We also had people like a troll in there talking about this being gun violence. No, it was people violence.
Yeah,
this was a person
right.
with a weapon that decided to use it in the worst way possible.
Yeah, I mean, look at what is your excuse for the knife attack in Charlotte? I mean, that was a knife, right. you know, still had the same effect, still killed somebody. Just wild. Anne Marie, don't stop. Give us a voice. This is an effort to stop the other voice, the people outside the machine. Keep going, Brandy Cruz. Charlie, you and others, keep our voice strong. We are going to keep going, 100%. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I might have to cry out the stress or whatever it is, or punch my pillow, but we'll keep going. Or pet my dog. Pet my dog quite a bit last night. Jesus says, oh, with a $50 super chat. Wow. Mm-hmm. Recycling these arguments so much. Why? Because it's easy to fill airtime with these. Enough of just keeping us on outrage loops. Let's actually end the division. Division gives you pieces. Subtraction leaves you with one, and one is undivided. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're talking about me recycling arguments or keeping us divided. I have no idea
about that whole thing, too.
Yeah, I don't know. But if you want to give me $50 to say it, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, you can... What is your hope, right? Like, what do you think brings people together? There's always going to be division. And by the way, there's always going to be political violence. There has been as long as politics has existed. But we're certainly in a heightened period of it now. We're never going to get, as a country, to a point where we don't have disagreement. And yeah, we talk about disagreement on the show. I talk about my opinions and my disagreement predominantly with what's happening in leftist states like Washington. I'm never going to stop doing that. And doing that doesn't mean that I'm stoking division. The divisions already exist. What I want is for the 80% of reasonable, rational people who have some semblance of common sense to push back against the real nonsense stuff, defunding the police, pushing radical gender on kids, boys and girls sports, taxing us to high heaven and then looking the other way and blaming Donald Trump's tariffs. Those are the things that I care about. So it's not stoking division to share your opinion. No. It wasn't stoking division for Charlie Kirk to share his opinion. Stoking division is putting a bullet in his neck for doing it. Give me a break. Old Sub Sailor, talking and communication is the key to solving problems. Charlie Kirk was a direct threat to the social communist agenda for this country. Sherry, Charlie Kirk was wise beyond his years. The truth torch that he carried shined very brightly, and now it must be carried forward by the rest of us. This is how we honor and magnify Charlie's voice in life. I do have to say, like, I thought I was pretty smart for a 31-year-old when I was 31. Like, people would always tell me you're very mature. Charlie Kirk made me look dumb. Like, he was 31.
Like, people with that kind of memory that can just pull out, you know, Bible verses and just that photographic memory. I mean, he had to have a photographic memory.
I do
just
wonder.
Pull that out. Yeah. I mean, it's genius.
He honestly was a genius. Genius level. Yeah. So, yeah,
it was
here
just like
I am.
Like, I mean, they were a different kind of genius, like prophet.
100%. All right. Speaking of Dory, we're featuring him in our closing sanity check. It's going to be an emotional one for all of it. But first, actually fitting, we have a First Mark spot here because First Mark, the owner of First Mark, was really good friends with Dory and took Dory, I hope we can say this, to the Charlie Kirk event that we're going to play a clip from in the closing sanity check. So anyway, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark challenge. We all need insurance. Why not make sure you have the best insurance that's actually going to cover you and you have it at the best price? It's hard to do that on your own. Insurance is really freaking confusing. I mean, no matter how easy the tool is that someone pitches to you, you really need a professional to go over your current needs, your current insurance, talk to you about what's happening with your life, your family, your business, and then make sure that they're tailoring your insurance needs to that so that you're properly covered, not paying for anything you don't need, and that you're not paying too much. We have so many undivided viewers and listeners who are now members of the First Mark family and who love it and who've emailed us and said they're saving thousands of dollars a year and all it took is a call to First Mark. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right. I always need in these moments, I'm looking for wisdom. I think we all are, right? We're all looking for outward for wisdom and something that can help us navigate these times. And someone in my life, and I know Nicole's life, who we always look to for wisdom, no matter what was happening, be it something in our personal lives or professional lives or something in the world. That person was the late Dory Monson. He was such, I think, a voice of wisdom for a lot of people. And I wanted to talk about him today in our closing sanity check. So back in October of 2021, and thank you to Matt Gilbert, an undivided viewer who dug this up and remembered that Dory had gone to see Charlie Kirk speak in Edmonds, in October of 2021. And Dory did a segment about what a profound experience this was for him. And he played on his show a segment of what Charlie Kirk had said that really stuck with him. And so it's a little long, it's 5 minutes, but you've made it this far in the show, and I figured we'd play it for you today.
It was wonderful because, and this is very relevant, I think, to you and to me. Certainly, there are a lot of people listening right now who disagree with me on my worldview and social issues and all of that. And just as certainly, there are a lot of people who agree with me on a lot of these issues, that we're going in the wrong direction and that we are doing horrible things to our children with the critical race theory in the schools and masking them during track meets. I mean, it's just craziness. The isolation, the suicides. And so a lot of us yearn for bedrock foundational values. And I know that I do. My foundation is my faith. It's my family. It's the values that I want to live for my kids and for my wife and all of that. And so that was one of the subjects last night. But it can seem hopeless at times when we see that this radical Marxist ideology has taken control of our city council and our schools and our corporations. How are we going to fight back against the enormity of the opposition? How do you keep hope in a world where everything seems to be stacked against traditional values? And this is what Charlie Kirk told the live audience last night in Edmonds at the Westgate Chapel.
The greatest man of the 20th century was a complicated man. He wrote 50 books. He was the Prime Minister of England when he was needed, and he was kicked out when he wasn't. It's Winston Churchill. Misunderstood, kicked out of history, didn't do everything perfect, but he explained his mistakes better than any other leader. Warned about communism, and he was really, really right about the National Socialist Workers' Party. So on December 6, 1941, our country was under attack. 5,000 people died in Hawaii at Pearl Harbor. An unspeakable preemptive strike against a nation, us, that said we don't want to get involved in another war. We lost enough in World War I. We're going to do isolation, non-engagement, go kill yourselves, Europe and Asia. That was our position. And FDR was a little bit on the edge of where he wanted to get involved or not. We did an oil embargo against Japan, and Imperial Japan thought that they could get us into the battle, which would then smoke us out, and eventually we'd never get involved in Asia again. And they were, honestly, their pride was their downfall. They preemptively striked Pearl Harbor, day that will live in infamy. People cried in the streets of America, and people all of a sudden got into that active posture. But there was only one person that is documented to be smiling on the morning of Pearl Harbor. Only one person had a smile a mile wide, and that was the greatest man in the 20th century, Winston Churchill. So he went into his war cabinet with his famous cigar, probably on 2 hours of sleep after a half glass of whiskey, again, a very complicated man. And he smiles to his war cabinet, and he says, "We've won the war." And his war cabinet says, "What are you talking about? Have you lost your mind? They just bombed a hospital last night in London. We don't have a navy. We just evacuated from Dunkirk a couple hundred thousand troops that were basically for slaughter, and they don't want to redeploy. We're losing 300 Royal Air Force members a day because of the German Luftwaffe. They are bombing us shock and awe, and the people of London want us to sue for peace. What do you mean we've won the war, Winston Churchill?" And he smiles and takes a puff out of his cigar. He says, "No. The Americans have woken up. We have won the war." Yeah. And I tell you here today that no matter what we're up against, that was only 80 years ago. And those are the stories that we should tell our children. What he was really saying is that people that were on the sidelines, that got in the arena, that were pushing back against what was wrong, when that happens, it's over. Yeah. That all of a sudden when people that were spectators, that are participants, it's over. And Winston Churchill, being a student of history, writing 50 books before, he knew that when people that otherwise were just doing their thing got out of the seats and into what matters, it's over. And so my call to action tonight is that if you get out of your seats and get into what matters, all of a sudden, we are going to win. And that's why I have hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some very wise words there from Charlie Kirk, who was just 27 years old, wise beyond his years at the time when he delivered them and shared that story in Edmonds, Washington. And they were shared by another very wise man who is also going to be missed very dearly, our friend Dory Monson. Two men who their absence from this earth just hits us so hard every day. And, you know, Charlie Kirk, it'll be the same. So that has been our closing sanity check for today. That's how I made it the whole show. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Cue the end before I cry on camera. Nicole, thank you. We appreciate all of you. We do. And look, you know, disagreement isn't division. It's not. Disagreement is not division. We have to do away with this idea that disagreeing on things contributes to division in our country. It does not. Disagreeing on things is normal. Disagreeing on things is fine. Disagreeing on things has happened throughout the entirety of our planet's existence. But you can disagree with people and not want them dead. You can disagree with people and not see them as less than human. And that is the problem that we have to solve. We will see you, subscribers, on the Sunday show. We're going to kind of switch topics on the Sunday show, talk about taxation in the state of Washington and what's happening with businesses. Then we'll see the rest of you back here on the live show Monday at noon. Remember to support our show. It's how this show exists. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And it's easy. We just tell you to click on the banner that says support the show.